Yeah, do you expect that to go much higher? What is your expectations in the asset?
So the problem, especially with the resources, it's again a snapshot in time, I keep saying, but I expect gold's going higher, a lot higher. I suspect copper is going a lot higher. I suspect uranium is going a lot higher. I suspect antimony is going a lot higher. I suspect that zinc is going a lot higher. I suspect that rare earths are going to become even more expensive. Do you see a theme there? They're all going higher because there's more dollars being printed. And we've discovered all the easy deposits, and we've become behind the curve. Most of these deposits that, I mean, copper, all the easiest deposits, unless it's in totally crazy jurisdictions, most of the copper deposits that were easy to find, the geologists could walk across the ground and see the mineralization at surface, have been found. You're drilling undercover now. You're having to use science. So first off, it's getting more expensive. And second off, over time, we keep using these metals up. So the real question is, what's going to happen in the short to medium term, which nobody really knows.
Jeff Phillips, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Oh, I'm recovering from a long week, but it was a good week. Good to
Yeah,
see
well,
you.
let's talk. Yeah, it's really good to see you. Let's talk about that, a good week, and also let's talk about as we were mentioning off camera, you're in a bull market, but yet it's hard to, well, I don't want to say it's hard, it's just confusing in one sense because as you are up a lot significantly, and I'm up a lot significantly just in the past few weeks that we've talked to each other. But it's like, how are you making decisions or new decisions, if you would? And are you taking money off the table? And how do you deal with this really coming bull market here?
Oh, I think that's every investor's question. And you and I are professionals. We've been doing this for 25 years or thereabouts. And when I go to a Beaver Creek, which is quite a lively show that happens in Beaver Creek, Colorado, this time of the year, I think companies, I can't remember the exact actual percentage, but it's something like 32% more companies were there presenting. Their meetings were up 17% this year. All the brokerage firms were sponsoring it, and you were seeing people you haven't seen at the Beaver Creek in a while. These conferences, I liken them to, almost like a high school reunion. If you've been in the business for a long time, you're going to know, a lot of people. They're not everybody, just like going back to your big high school reunion, but they're a lot of fun. But what's changed is, again, we are in a, gold's hitting a new record high today, I believe, as we speak. I think it's over $3,700 an ounce. I'm a firm believer that if you look out far enough, gold keeps going higher. I don't see the governments of the world printing less money. So that commodity over the long haul is a great store of value. Doesn't mean a gold stock is necessarily, especially an exploration or development company, is a good store of value. So what you have to adjust to in this market now is you've been in a not so great market for the past, well, it hasn't been a bull market in 14 years. It's been a couple of mini ones, 2016 and a little bit after COVID. But what you have to adjust for right now is that, I've got companies I really like. They're quality management teams. They're people that have done stuff before. But those stocks are up significantly this year. They're still great companies. But, if you have the hiccup, I do expect at some point during this bull market, I don't want your listeners to go, gee, I bought this stock at, 50 cents, which is the junior market. Now it's trading at 30 cents. Well, it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, I've got seven companies drilling right now. I'm hoping two of those make legitimate big discoveries. I'm hoping three more don't kill their prod, do okay, and maybe two struggle. I mean, but again, if I get a legitimate discovery, it doesn't matter if copper, uranium, or gold, or whatever the underlying commodity is doing, as long as it's not dropping from the sky, I'm going to do really well. And that's what I specialize in, companies that are $5 to $30 million market caps. But I'm having to adjust my valuation basis when I'm looking at something, because a lot of those companies I could buy all day long at, $5 to $10 million market caps, rightly so, were very undervalued in the speculative junior market over the years. But they're starting to get revalued. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, and it goes to because we've taken some money off the table, but it's this. I guess it's this knowing when to be disciplined, and I think we always need to be disciplined, if you would. But also knowing when are we in a bull market, and I guess I want to hear from you. But my whole thing is, I'm not going to chase. I'm just That's part of being disciplined. I'm not going to chase a stock. I want to get in before the move, if you would. And then if I still do like the company, I want it to come to me, if you would. And that I could miss out. That's fine. But I'm going to go look for the next project that I don't have to chase. And then that's just a risk tolerance, and also just a discipline that I just have imposed on myself. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you should always, it depends on when you say, taking profits. I think you should all, I try to follow a rule that I have more cash at the end of the year, really quarterly, than I did the prior quarter, which means you have to harvest some profits. So I've got some big positions in companies that, again, I've had for 5 years, that, are up 500%, and they're legitimate tier one projects now, from where I started with them, and they're moving forward. I'm always selling a few shares. That's why I say I'm like a friendly investor. But I just did a deal and I wrote a check for a very small deal, and I was $500,000 of the financing. I made sure that some of my other, it wasn't a lot. I may own 3 million shares of a $4 stock. I'm taking some money off the table on that. I paid 50 cents for it, very, just to raise enough money and some other stocks to do the new. I don't have to. I have the money to do the new deal. I just only want so much exposure in that space. So, I think you should always be looking. I liken it to having, I did this in the original interview. I like to have 10, 12 stocks that I have, I tend to have, that I'm involved with. I'm an advisor too, and I'm a very large shareholder. And they're at varying stages. And I've got five or six other large holdings outside of that that have graduated to the, $150 to $300 million market cap. And people that are more, looking for the $1 billion, and they can put more money in because they're managing more money, usually institutionally and other people. But I'm waiting for them to come in, and so it's like growing crops. You have a bunch of crops in the field, and some of them are just sprouting, and some of them are ready for harvest. That's the junior resource market. So.
Yeah, then that's a great analogy. It really is. And not only do you see where companies, if you would, they're flowering and they're starting to grow stocks, pun intended, and starting to really, really grow, if you would. And this is not advice. This is just me. Just me. I think it's just very important just to manage the risk of a portfolio, and that's by taking cash off the table. And I don't want to buy something if I haven't taken cash from something else, if that makes sense, while I might maintain a position, if that might make sense.
Correct. If you're fully allocated for the money you want. But you and I have talked before. Most people you're listening are listening to this, I'm assuming they're investing already in junior resource stocks, and they
Correct.
somewhat understand that market. They have a financial advisor that specializes in that. They follow a newsletter writer. They get, good information from a show like yours. Because again, the junior resource market, if you think gold's going from 3,700 to 4,000, and you have $5,000 to invest total in the gold market, you should be buying one of the gold producers, which will do really well if gold keeps going higher to 5,000. These juniors aren't, sure that, they at the in a bull market, once the seniors move and the developers move, then it comes down to the juniors. But most people shouldn't be investing in this. So I'm assuming that anybody that's actually listening to me says, gee, I own junior stocks and I want to learn something about it. If you're thinking about getting into it, you need, nothing I say, stocks or anything else, you should be finding a quality advisor.
Couldn't agree more. And in fact, I go back to a conversation, multiple conversations I've had with our friend Rick Rule. Most people should be investing in the big name producers, if you would. That's the safest way, and you're going to get plenty of upside with those if you think gold's going to 4 grand or 5 grand or whatever, and silver going to going to hang out around 40 or $50 an ounce, or go to 100 an ounce. Really, it's just I couldn't agree more. That is some advice I will give, is stick with the big players. This is the Wild West, as you and I have commented a lot on, if you would. And it's really like think of it like a tech startups. A lot of tech startups don't go anywhere. They go out of business. As good as a
Or
idea,
biotech, yeah, biotech, yeah.
biotech, yeah, they don't get FDA approval. What if there's so many things that can go wrong? So just really, I can't emphasize that enough. Buyer beware. That all being said, tell me about Beaver Creek. Tell me about your experience there, and also tell me about, we're in the place now, and I talk to CEOs all the time. where it's like every single idea, it's like you're listening to a broken record. Everybody has the best find, everybody has the best idea or whatever. How do you filter all of
Yeah.
that?
Well, you and I did a talk already, and you'd have to, I don't want to go back into it, but my most important thing is structure and people. So the structure of the deal, the insiders and large shareholders, are they fully reporting? Do they have skin in the game? Who are the other shareholders that you've brought in? You know, are these people longer term? Are they shorter term? Did you do some financing with the last time you raised it, 140 people that wrote checks, or was it four people? So I want to know what the structures and the people, because if the market changes, these stocks can drop 30%, 40%, they can go up 30 or 40%. And if this is what I believe the start of a bull market, I think they're really going to rip higher. But so those are the most important things, is to look for the people and the structure. And once you have that, my time horizon in these deals is, 2 to 5 years, and typically. And so again, I specialize in companies that are, $5 million to $30 million market caps, and hoping to get those to, a $300 million market cap, or still be a shareholder. And but I will have taken some profit along the way. I don't think I
Yeah.
even answered your question. Sorry, Andy.
No,
So.
you did. You did. Well, you answer part of it. Tell me about Beaver Creek. Tell me about the energy that you were feeling there. And just talk to me about your experience.
Tons of energy, and like you said, what you're seeing is, if especially as someone, again, I'm not gonna, anybody who's sort of known, whether it's a great track record, there's a lot of people that have made a lot of money in the business, in this business, that I don't dislike, but I don't respect. They've made money, period. I don't judge someone by how much money they've made. I more want to see people that I know have made a, decent money, and good money, but they've done it the right way. So almost anybody who's been in for a long time has some deal they're dusting off, or has found something that's cheap, and they're financing it. And again, a lot of these things can get financed. They whether it's, I don't want to name people or companies, but they finance these things very cheap. Then they, because the market's good, so they do a 3-penny round and or a 5-cent round at X market cap, and they immediately take it back to their organization or their group, and they do another round at 40 cents because you're in that kind of market. So they're just printing money. And the fact is that anybody offering those more inexpensive rounds of financing, sort of the guys in the know, those checks were harder to get written, and people had a harder time even doing that 2 years ago. Now, if you have any sort of name or been around, and you bring someone and say you can be in the early round with me, they that happens. So, but as the companies are more mature, and the companies that have been here, what I'm seeing is a lot of the market caps that have, doubled here or whatever, they're looking really thin as far as sellers go, because people are excited. So sure, there's less sellers in the market and more buyers. So even though that I don't think this bull market's trickled into the quality companies that have finally moved up considerably, I see less selling. I don't see the buying yet, the euphoric, even when the professionals start buying their own stuff again, because then I think that's going to happen. But really, what I see is almost any deal that gets pitched, it's early on. I mean, I was looking at a deal that in 2 weeks ago, a very well-known person, or a well-known person to us in my space, was telling me about the geologists, and they didn't like them. And I said, well, I really like this company because, it's got XYZ, very small market cap, and they did this deal. And they're like, yeah, but I don't know if that person can, drive it. And then, by the end of Beaver Creek, I get a call, and they're like, gee, we'd like to do half the fine. I haven't even agreed to do the financing, but we'd like to do half. And that's the only because by the end of Beaver Creek, they're probably really excited. And they
Right.
also realized that if I was going to get involved, I was going to give some parental supervision. And again, it doesn't mean the company's going to work. It is undervalued for what they have. But, I'm going to be stuck in that company for 2 years. But if you can write a check at a $5 million market cap, and you know that anytime I get involved with a company, it'll probably go to a $20 million market cap. It's not really, I'm not a short-term player, so I'm really wanting to focus on people that, regardless of if it's a bull market or not, that they want to let the company develop over a period of years, not months.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that then. And again, knowing that you want to be a longer term holder and potentially also taking some money off the table, which is what I do. If you would, and we mentioned this last talk, you're looking at share structure and you're looking at people. Anything else that again would make you want to invest in a company? What's your next criteria? Is it jurisdiction? Is it ounces in the ground? Tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Jurisdiction plays a big role in that. The project plays a big role. What makes sense about this project? Does it make sense that it's next to a major mine owned by a major? But again, if you're looking at exploration, it's early stage work. It's the quality of the people involved, how they made a discovery before. But jurisdiction plays a big part. The underlying commodity. I mean, there's some of these. I'm a big believer in us trying to secure our supply chain. A lot of these smaller metals like rare earths and uranium and things like that. But I want to see a market that actually trades. I mean, some of these things, germanium or however you pronounce it, I don't know the market, so I'm probably not gonna invest in, unless there's another metal there. I really like projects, gold projects that have an antimony credit or whatever you want to call it, because I think antimony is something, again, the Chinese control. I was involved very early on with a company called Midas Gold. It's now called Perpetua. Took 10 years to permit that thing. I was involved very early. I don't even remember the market cap, but probably like 30 mil, 40 mil. I don't know. It was 8, 9, 10 years ago. But that's moved on to be Perpetua Resources. The market cap, I can't tell you, but they, in the process with the U.S. government, it's been permitted now very quickly because people are realizing we need that security supply. It's 10, 20, it's at least 10 times, 20 times higher than where I financed it and bought shares. My point being that moved quickly because of the antimony finally, and that's what, it's a gold deposit, but it has a lot of antimony. So again, you're seeing a $2 billion mine get built in Idaho now and funding coming. So again, if there's a metal that's interesting, that's part of something else, I'll definitely look at that. But I'm predominantly copper. Gold are my main area. I mean, I have some uranium. I do prospect generators that have multiple metals exposure, but mostly gold and copper are what I'm in. So
Got it.
silver too.
It, and we talked about this last time as well, but talk to me just about jurisdictions again. I know you're pretty, well, I don't want to put, I want you to tell me, but you're, yeah, tell me, talk to me about jurisdictions,
Yeah,
what you're interested
jurisdictions are
in.
really important, being able to get things done and move forward, and the permitting and getting your drill permits, and that changes all the time. And that's why all these companies are a snapshot in time, that things change internally and with countries. If you ask most people in the business, probably, I don't know, six, 7, 8 years ago, to rank, Chile, Peru, and Argentina in order of what's more friendly to be working in. Your number one choice would have been probably Chile, then it would have been Peru, then it would have been Argentina. Well, that's all gotten flipped. Now it's Argentina at the top. Chile might be second, and Peru's getting somewhat better, but administration's changed, what's going on there. But again, I'm mostly South America, North America, and I have some Nordic investments in Europe, and a few other places. Looking at a deal that's in Spain, and I've done stuff in Portugal before, and again, I don't do a lot in Asia, and I do a lot in Australia. But anyway.
Yeah, just very friendly mining jurisdictions. And the thing is, I think that's a great point too. And again, everybody has their own risk and everybody has their own story. That being said, I think if you just focus to very friendly jurisdictions where it's easier, if you would, or the friendly for to mining, in this environment,
Or
you
the
should do
people have a
pretty well.
background there. Or Andy, the people have a background there. So like Bravo Mining, another company that I financed early on, that's got a, I don't know, $300 million market cap now, and I think financed at a $40 million market cap. That's the CEO, as you and I have talked, owns half the company, fully reporting. Luis, so the last company, he sold for $460 million. But more importantly, he is the attorney geologist that has been involved in permitting for the majors in Brazil for years. He's very well connected in Brazil. So you'll see that Bravo very early on got their permit to build a mine, fast tracked. Well, I wonder why, because he knows everybody there. He's been doing it for years and he has an excellent track record. So somebody else, if it was a Canadian guy that didn't just moved into Brazil, and I like the project, but he's like, yeah, I'm trying to find my way around. Well, he's not connected in Brazil. I want to see that the people, when I talk about people, there's people on the board that are advising, that are very, known commodities in those countries. Anyway, you want to see people from those countries, because at the end of the day, you want to, your partners are also the local communities, and and the government, and you want to be able to know what the ins and outs are and how to treat those people right. You want to create a win-win situation for everybody. That's how you do well in building a mining project.
Yeah, no, I really couldn't agree more with you on that. It's just so important to have the right people, and specifically the people to move things forward, and people that have access to capital and they can raise capital, because this is such a capital intensive business here, if you would. And also to all my viewers, I don't want to speak for you, Jeff, but Jeff is really, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, you're focused on the very early stages of the Lassonde curve. So again, this is high risk to all those listeners and viewers out there. This is the higher risk, but it's also the biggest reward. So when Jeff talks about, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, you have 10 companies. I'm just using that as an arbitrary number. Two, you'll hit home runs with. Two, they won't, maybe, they'll be good stewards and they'll just plod along. Maybe they even go up, and then you'll have the rest that won't do anything, or it might even, nothing will ever happen, and they might even be K. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And when you say two hit home runs, I mean home runs. I don't mean, in the Canadian scene, often a home run is something that doubles or triples, or and the brokerage firm and the individuals behind it get out and it was a home run. I'm talking about a major discovery that, but again, that's a snapshot in time. So over the last 6 years, I don't know, I've probably had, I'm in 18 deals, and some of them have graduated past me, but most of those are up right now. So I, again, most of those are up from where I got involved with my group and said, let's, I think all of them are up, except for maybe one, which is almost up now and is developing. So in a bull market, stuff starts to move. So, but yeah, the what I'm looking for is to have a tier one type discovery, with a company that's got a market cap of, usually by, they're at a 30, 40, $50 million market cap. They've already done some stuff, and then they show with multiple rigs that, hey, this is going to be big. But yeah, again, it's very high risk. You're right. Most of the time, a 10-year period, 12-year period, you're if you're doing people and structure, you're still making money. Again, I've had a great run the last 5 or 6, 7 years, with companies. It's just now all of a sudden, I look at all, and the ones that have graduated are doing great, and it's great for them because they're raising money at like 200, $300 million market caps, taking it to the next stage. The money's easy for them. I'm just a shareholder. The earlier stage ones are all moving very quickly too. But like I said, I've got one, two, three, four, five, at least six companies drilling right now, and three more that are going to start. And some of those are, already have discoveries. Some of them are brownfield sites. Some of them are grassroots exploration. The project's never been drilled before. It's got trenching that looks good. It's got geophysics. So varying stages of risk just in my high-risk portfolio. So, yeah.
And another way I do it too, I won't speak for you, is I have really three different buckets for my own portfolio. I have the producers, which I want to participate, because I mean, producers are just printing money at these levels, if you would, of metal prices.
Yep.
And that's one bucket. Okay. So I'm going to participate if gold doesn't do anything. I'm gonna still theoretically make money on them. They're very low risk, if you would. Then I have a really deep value, if you would, that I see in the Lassonde curve, and those are still out there, by the way, I see. But that being said, they're harder to find now just because of the moves that we have. But I look for deep value in the middle, and then another bucket, if you would, is very, very early stages. That is my high risk portfolio that I'm okay. I don't want to say okay to lose money, but I'm mentally and emotionally prepared to lose money on, if you would. And I just understand that's part of the game. Comment about that, if you would.
I couldn't agree with you more. I agree with everything you said there. Again, you want to, most people in this space should have the larger players. If you want to be exposed to uranium and you bought a uranium ETF, like the Sprott Uranium ETF that tracks the price of uranium, great. If you want a little bit more risk, you buy a Cameco, which is a company that, is a producer, or like a Denison, or a, someone like that, and you work your way down the curve. But what happens in these bull markets is you see in gold moves for, I'm using gold as an example, the underlying commodity. And gold tends to drag all the other resource companies along with it, but gold's moved to a new high. That, it's been moving to a new high, and at first it didn't make much difference to the equities. Then you saw the majors start to move, and the eight majors have formed. And again, I don't know what Agnico Eagle's up in the last 2 years, but it's like a junior. It's got to be 100%. You see the Newmonts, the Barricks, and then you see the one asset producers, the mid tiers. Then you start to see the companies with development projects that are, at a pre-feasibility, bankable feasibility. They've been struggling because nobody believes this or that, or it hasn't been that great at $2,000 gold. You see those start to move, and they're moving now. When it gets down to the juniors, and as you get down to the pure exploration plays, that tends to be the tail end of the bull market, and those things can just move, exponentially, especially the ones that are making a difference. So there's a whole range just in the resource sector of what you want to do, and that should just be a subsection of your overall financial picture, your real estate, your retirement account, your. So again, I'm not a financial planner. When you and I'm not a, again, you should consult someone, especially with whatever you're doing, that's a professional and does that for a living. I just speculate in the junior resource space, development. I do own some producers, but again, that's because that's what I do. It's it'd be like saying, I'm not going to get into the business of building, I don't know, cars right now. It's not my background. So, or I'm not going to come up with an early stage clinical biotech and go finance it because, it's just not what I do. So.
100%. And I guess that's a great lesson and just great information to all of our viewers and listeners. Really know who you are, and that means not only knowing your risk tolerance, but know what you're good at. And you really got to spend time in the space, especially the early stage junior natural resource space. You just got to spend a lot of time getting to know the people and getting to know everything that Jeff and I just talked about. So I couldn't agree more. Now, Jeff, what I do would like to do, and I say this with a caveat to all my viewers and listeners, this is not advice. We're not just out there pitching stock either. But if you could, and again, do your own due diligence. This is just not advice, bottom line. And also, if there are many other good, great companies that I'm invested in, or I think they're great, that Jeff's not invested in. And I won't mention those. But what I'm trying to say is, like, well, if you don't mind, Jeff, name drop a few companies, but just to all our viewers and listeners know, do your own due diligence. This is not advice. If I'm invested in the same company, I will also give that caveat. This is for educational purposes only. And also, just if you want to use this to make a list. Don't go chase something because Jeff said it or Andy said it or whatever. Just you can certainly use it as a list of, hey, that looks interesting, and start doing your own due diligence. So that all being said, Jeff, what do you currently like? And did you see anything specifically at Beaver Creek that you liked? And also, I'll say this, and I don't want to embarrass you at all, Jeff. In the past 4 to 6 weeks, 8 weeks, I've had Rick Rule on, I've had Jeff on, I've had Michael Gentile on, and I'm flooded with companies. Hey, pitch this to Jeff, pitch this to Rick, whatever. And I send the email, but you guys do your own work. But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, and everybody's doing their own thing. So yeah, the bottom line, everything you said, none of this is advice. It's just what I had tons of meetings at Beaver Creek. I mean, I'm so worn out today. I didn't get back till Sunday. I took a day and a half off. But and again, just so your listeners understand, I'm a large shareholder. I'm going to talk mostly, I guess, about companies I'm a shareholder in. And some of those I consult for. That means I'm like, but I call it activist investor. I'm advising them on how to build out their company properly, so that they can raise capital in the future at hopefully less of a cost to me, which means at higher prices, and build out a company that goes to $100 to $300 million market cap. Because a lot of guys can do a good job and they get move their projects forward in the field, but you got to think, where are my inflection points? Where do I go to the investment community and ask for more money? How do I do that so it's most beneficial to my existing shareholders, which I am. So you call it, I actually call it parental supervision in the junior resource space. But I'm advising some of these companies. So, one of the companies, it's not, I own shares in it. I'm just picking. I'm not going to go through every company. And, but, you could do some due diligence on, because it seems very exciting to me. It always has. There's a company called Gladiator Metals. It's up in Canada, their asset, and it's a copper asset. And, it was a past producer. And, I financed the company at I think 30 cents, and the stock's probably at $1.20 now. So it's sort of, past my advice. They just got through raising, I can't remember, 21 million. They've got 30 million in the bank. So this isn't your typical junior. It's also got a market cap probably of, 90 million Canadian now, as opposed to 30 million when, 3 years ago when I financed it. But it seems to me that their asset, they just put up more news today. They had great news last week. It seems like they're changing. When I got involved, you're hoping to see 20 to 40 million tons of this grade copper. It seems like they're finding a different type of mineralization. Things are getting bigger. These were a different type of deposit. Now it's looking like there might be a porphyry. It's a really good team. They've raised money successfully, even in the market for the last 3.5 years, which wasn't great. It's always been at higher prices. So as a shareholder, that's a good track record, right? If someone's raising capital at higher prices every time, it's, and even if you're in this new round, which was oversubscribed at, I think, 95 cents a share, they oversubscribed it, and those people should feel confident that they haven't yet done a financing, and they're going to have to keep raising money. That's what these juniors do. But again, if they take this, that was something very interesting to me. I've got a number of companies that I don't really want to talk about because they're drilling. I'm excited about several of them, but I don't want one. I don't want someone to run out there and buy one of these companies, and then it's mediocre results, and they're down 30% next week. And the other thing is, I think some of my companies are probably going to hit, and I definitely don't want to influence those stock prices right now and have someone
Sure.
thinking that, because I don't know. I don't care. I own so many shares. I'm waiting to see the assays. But a lot of times you'll see in these stocks that people recommend, drilling's coming, and a week before the stock pops 30% or something. That's because people are talking, and and friends. I
Happens all the
just
time.
don't even appear that I'm doing that. So a company I like that, is down today. It went really, really up a lot after we announced the findings. A company called Kincora Copper. Kincora Copper is a prospect generator. It means they use other people's money to drill their projects. They give up part of the project. I think the stock, currently has a market cap of probably $40 million, but they have $110 million in potential partner spending. It's run by the geologists, or ex-Newcrest geologists, who've made huge discoveries. But again, I financed that company back in July with Rick Rule, and we put a year hold on our stock. Which most people don't. It's 4 months or no hold at all, and it's moved up. It was probably I don't know, I'm trying to think, a 12, $14 million market cap, and now it's 38 or something like that. But again, I suspect that over time they have an excellent chance of making a discovery. An excellent chance doesn't mean they're going to do it. It means they have a better chance than a lot of companies. People who've made big discoveries tend to have a chance to do that. So that was an interesting company. I'm trying to, but again, all your listeners should do their own diligence. Another company I've been a shareholder in for a long time is Hammond Metals. They're in Peru. It's been a slow process with permits because of Peru. They are drilling now. Their first target they drilled, they have lots of targets. The first target they drilled didn't have the results we wanted. The stock sold off, starting to come back now. They're drilling two more targets. What I'm really excited about is we're in the process of the major project, which has lots of targets on it. I forget how many porphyries. That won't be drill ready till we're hoping, beginning of second quarter, third quarter next year. That's the real prize there. But again, that's a guy named Michael Hudson, who I was involved with a rare earth company 15 years ago that went up 2,000% when we met, and I financed it, and we became friends. More recently, he's also done Southern Cross. I was lucky to have a few shares in that. Southern Cross, if in the last 4 years came to market at a $30 or $40 million market cap. He's turned that into a major gold discovery in Australia, and I think the market cap's 1.5. I don't know exactly, but it's over $1 billion, but quite a way. So he's a successful guy. It doesn't mean I couldn't buy Hannon. I don't even know where it's trading today at 80 cents, $80 million market cap. Doesn't mean that if everything doesn't work out, it could drop by half if the resource market takes a pause, or, and it could double. Again, I'm betting on him making another discovery, and he's done it a few times before. Anything you want, something else, or
Yeah, you can give me one more if you don't mind.
the royalty space is really interesting to me. The royalty streaming space. There's been some very successful companies in that space. Your Franco-Nevadas and your Wheaton Precious Metals and Royal Gold have all done really well. It's a great business model. Of the streaming and royalty is slightly different. The royalty is well, you'd have to ask someone to explain it better than me, but I can tell you that that space is a More companies came to that space 10 years ago because there was so much success in it. It's a great business model. If you believe in gold and silver, it's safer than trying to invest in a mine. There's been tons of consolidation, as you know, Andy, this year. Our Royal Gold bought Sandstorm, our royalty company bought Horizon. I can't remember who Triple Flag bought
Triple
it. It
Flag with
was
erosion, if I'm not mistaken.
no, it's your it starts with an E, but I can't remember the name. And then you just had, I can't even think, there was another one just recently. Oh, you just had EMX and Elemental Altius, or however they say it, merge. You've had Tether put, a couple $100 million now into that, $100 more million dollars in that combined royalty deal. Tether's a stable coin that also has a stable coin that's backed by gold. So I like that space. And I'm involved, you've met her. I'm involved with a company called Empress Royalty, Alexander, with your Sharon. Again, the company is not as undervalued. It's still undervalued, in my opinion, but it's moved up with the price of gold. But that has the opportunity with her execution and the team and the fact that Endeavor Financial backs them. That has the opportunity to be, really take off now. It's becoming a profitable company. They're raising cash flow. And I believe she'll continue to execute. So I can't tell you at, 90 cents that it's a $3 stock. I can tell you it's undervalued probably for their assets. But again, what you're betting on there is that she continues to execute as she has the last 3 years. And if I believe gold and silver are going higher, that's a company I own shares in and I also consult for. But yeah, those are some companies to do your due diligence on. So.
Thank you so much for that. And there's a recurring theme here that I'm getting from you as people. You just r really, I mean, you bet on, you have your own criteria, and I'll put to our old or our last interview in the show notes. But it's just investing in people that you believe in, and then going from there, correct?
Yes, but it's, and just again, you and I keep saying it, it's a high risk sector. And even when you're talking about a company on the Lassonde curve, that some of my companies, like I mean, it's like we did an interview and maybe I mentioned Bravo last time we did it. Well, it was trading at 275 or something like that when, if I did mention it. But in the last 3 weeks, the stock's hit, I think, 380. I haven't sold any shares. It's a tier one palladium platinum asset run by a guy who owns 50% of the company. But the market's changed over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and again, it wouldn't surprise me to have the stock pull back to 275. It's not going to change the eventual outcome that I see. And it wouldn't surprise me to do an interview with you in 5 weeks and the stock's trading at $5 because platinum and palladium are doing well. I don't know. But I'm with people like that, I'm betting that they're able to sell the asset to a bigger player, and I'm willing to be patient. So.
Talk to me, and we'll end with this. Talk to me really about what your outlook is. Your outlook changed at all on the metals? I mean, again, we're looking at, well, what is it, 3,600? I don't know the exact price of gold in US dollars here, but around $3,600 gold. And then we're looking at, $41 silver. Do you expect that to go much higher? What's your expectations in the asset?
The problem, especially with the resources, it's again a snapshot in time, I keep saying, but I expect gold's going higher, a lot higher. I suspect copper is going a lot higher. I suspect uranium is going a lot higher. I suspect antimony is going a lot higher. I suspect that zinc is going a lot higher. I suspect that rare earths are going to become even more expensive. Do you see a theme there? They're all going higher because there's more dollars being printed. And we've discovered all the easy deposits, and we've become behind the curve. Most of these deposits that, I mean, copper, all the easiest deposits, unless it's in totally crazy jurisdictions, most of the copper deposits that were easy to find, the geologists could walk across the ground and see the mineralization at surface, have been found. You're drilling undercover now. You're having to use science. So first off, it's getting more expensive. And second off, over time, we keep using these metals up. So the real question is, what's going to happen in the short to medium term, which nobody really knows. Over time, all these go up and massively. So again, that's why gold's always been a, it's a measure of the how many dollars are in print. So, but in the short term, again, if I said I think gold's going to $6,000 an ounce and everybody should own a junior gold stock and go out and buy these 10, right? It's very possible that over a year period of time or 6 months, you could watch your portfolio drop by half. Very, and you and if you use margin and everything else, you could get wiped out. And then gold goes to $20,000 an ounce a year later. Well,
Right.
timing, the market can remain irrational far longer than I can remain solvent. And it happened to people in the 70s, in the last big, that was a big gold boom. People were betting that gold would, I can't remember the actual prices, but massively in the resource sector. And gold hit, I want to say 150 or 300 and dropped to 150 or whatever it was. It dropped by half. And all these gold bugs and got, lost all their money because they were margined and people in the business. But they were right in the longer term. By 1980, gold had hit, gone up 200, 300%, and you had these mining stocks back then that were up thousands of percent. So your timing, don't over leverage yourself in anything. Forget the junior mining market. I had a mentor named Jim Dines, Mr. Dines. He wrote the Dines letter, and he had a
Yep.
saying: rich or poor, it's good to have cash. Rich or
Yeah.
poor, it's good to have cash. And really what you're saying is that, always have cash. And like I said earlier, regardless of what you're investing in, you should always try to have a little more cash every year. Most people want to be fully invested, even in our space. And again, that's not a good plan unless you
No,
hit it
that's not the
perfect. Then,
plan. Yeah,
anyway,
good luck hitting
so
it perfect. No, that's well
yeah.
said, and I think that is a great way to put it. Just really have a lot of caution, even though with gold prices up here, just to all my viewers and listeners, nothing beats doing the work, doing your own due diligence, and just having caution. And just greed's not your friend. There's a time to be greedy, which is when the market's really down. It's not
Right.
time to be greedy when the market's really up. And I'm not saying that it's not going to go higher, and I agree with your same sentiments. I think it's going a lot higher. But in the short
I
to
do too.
intermediate term, who knows? And I've had my portfolio go down 50% or more in this space. So
Yeah, so have
that's a caution to everybody out there as well.
Yeah.
Just beware and be disciplined. I also want to give you a shout out to you, Jeff. Jeff, to my, I mean, there's really no way to contact Jeff. Jeff doesn't do this. Jeff trades his own book and invests his own book. And Jeff is just doing this really just to, as a favor, really to me and also to all my viewers and listeners to educate the people. So I want to thank you for that, Jeff. I really do.
Yeah, I'll be at a couple conferences coming up. So if you want to ask me questions, I'll be at the I think it's called the MIF conference in Vancouver at the end of the month. And then my one of my favorite conferences in the resource space is Brian London's Gold Newsletter New Orleans conference. That's beginning of November, and I'll be there. So if you have questions or you see me walking around, and again, I'm just I know most of the companies there. I know people. And and anyway, so you're welcome to ask me about different stuff, and I'm happy to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm tentatively planning to go to the New Orleans conference, and that's actually the first conference I met Doug Casey, who I just had on, as well as Rick Wool, and I followed them around like a puppy dog when I was there 30 years ago. So,
How's
Jeff, want to
Doug
thank.
doing? I need to give Doug a call. I love.
Yeah, he's a great talk. Probably the one of the most fascinating
Yeah.
people I've ever met. So, but
He's a
Jeff, thank.
fascinating individual.
Yes, I want to thank you so much for
Thank you
your
for having
time.
me, Andy.
Yeah, you bet. Love to have you on again soon.
Thank you.
You bet. Take care.